Before we continue, one of the ways we keep all of our content for you, the listener, free of charge is our amazing sponsors, and today, Anchor is one of those sponsors. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free, there's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcasts right from your phone or computer. Anchor is going to distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere podcasts are listened to, and you can even make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started.
Tonight, The Punisher returns for season two on Netflix, and so does The Punisher After Show right here on AfterBuzz TV. We're going to talk about episodes 1, 2, and 3, and only episodes 1, 2, and 3. The Punisher After Show starts now.
You're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
Oh, yes, indeed. Welcome to The Punisher After Show. And The Punisher After Show is another word for nothing left to lose. I'm Christian Black, joined by the one and only Zia Landerson. Zia Anderson.
This song afterwards.
Yes.
Like, I literally just want to go sit and just listen to this song every time I hear it.
See, it kind of makes me want to go to a bar and get my ass kicked. Now, some people, they might want to go in a bar and actually beat some people up. But now I understand my own physical prowess.
Right.
I would be getting my ass kicked. But if it was to this song, I feel like I would at least be able to tolerate it a little bit better. Which... we will build to the point of talking about that song fairly shortly. But as I said in the open, we are only talking about episodes 1, 2, and 3. This is a Netflix show. The after show is going to be the binge style. So you have until tomorrow at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, when we will be doing episodes 4, 5, and 6.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll be back next week. We'll do 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, and then 13 all by itself.
Because it's going to be big.
Yeah. So for those of you who've seen some of the other recent Marvel After Shows, Z and I have managed to cram 4 episodes into each of those. We think we need to let Frank breathe a little bit. And let's dive right into it. Give us your thoughts kind of about where Frank is when we first see him in season 2 and kind of contrasted with the way season 1 ended.
Well, it definitely made perfect sense because he kind of got, when season 1 ended, he sort of got a get out of jail free card.
Yeah.
And became Pete Castiglione. Castiglione? Castiglione, right?
Yeah, Castiglione.
Yeah, became Pete Castiglione. So seeing him in a bar in the middle of nowhere seemed pretty right. Like, yeah, that's what he would be doing. Where he'd be going, we don't know. He's just, you know, doing it.
Passing through.
Yeah. But as we all know, Frank, that times cannot stay peaceful, and then obviously we wouldn't have a season 2. So you just know it's only a matter of time. I'm really happy they got into it in the first episode. You know, I talked about this on Marvel TV Weekly. There were, like, one tiny part that I was like, meh. And then we got into it, and I was like, yes! So, you know.
Yeah, I think a lot of times what you can say about, you know, someone, you know, one of these kind of protagonists, especially these Marvel shows, is that trouble always manages to find him. But really what it comes down to for Frank is that he kind of seeks out the trouble.
Oh, and he wants it.
And
he's looking for it.
His young friend, whom we'll talk about, his traveling companion in a little bit, she makes the point of you kind of really enjoy when this stuff finds you. And yeah, you know, let's be honest. Frank has many traumas in his life, but the key one being his wife and children murdered in front of him.
Oof.
So I think there's been a little bit of a psychic break for Frank. And he really revels in these sort of confrontations. But we're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves. So we see him here in a bar in Michigan, you know, which very few of your Marvel stories start off in Michigan, you know. That is probably the definition of just passing through for somebody like the Punisher. And he befriends Beth, the bartender, who I think...
befriends.
And then he really befriends her, you know. He stands up for her with just a painfully, just very creepy, inappropriate guy, which I think that, you know, he deserved to get some fingers broken or whatever it is that Frank actually did to him. And,
yes,
you know, I think that when you get a guy like Frank Castle. Your expectation is going to be when the cute, from my estimation, possibly Z has a different opinion, bartender says, do you want to get a drink? His answer is probably going to be like, no, that's all right. I'm going to do me. You know, that's not my thing. He says, I'd like that. And he does head home with her for, well, let's just say an evening. And I think that's what you were referencing, right, Zia? That was the sequence that took you a little bit out of your punishing phase.
It did. And it was fine. And it made sense to why he would want to come back and why, you know, it gave him a reason to come back to the bar because he, you know, had a nice night with this girl and he had feelings. But there was definitely during it where I was like, all right. Enough. Can we move it along, please? We get it. You guys are bonding and you're loving each other. And like, is all banging like this?
I mean, apparently, for Frank, it is. And there were a lot of times where I'm just like, are they doing like a weird editing trick or are they at it again? Come on, Frank. Let's go. You were waging a one-man war on crime. I think that it's important storytelling-wise just because of the simple fact that it kind of shows you where he's at right now. He, at least when the season starts, he is a little bit, you know, unplugged from his usual vendetta, his usual approach towards the entire world. You know, he's a little bit more laid back. And he's like, you know what? Yeah, I am going to enjoy a nice evening with, you know, this girl I seem to be hitting it off with.
Has a few beers.
And I don't think you would see that. Last season's, obviously it wouldn't have fit in the storytelling, but just to where he was at emotionally, I don't think he could have let himself do that.
Yeah.
You know, he was just preoccupied enough with, you know, Microchip's wife trying to kiss him. You know, that was enough action for him last year. What was it about that sequence that bothered you so much, Zia?
I think it was just because it was so slow and it doesn't bother me as much as, like, they did it in a way where I wasn't like, oh God, or rolling my eyes. Literally the only thing was that I was, you know, waiting for it to move on to the next point. So it was like a point that I was like, oh, I'm not totally into this scene and like what's happening. And to me, the woman was a little too awkward for me.
Right.
I was like, oh, okay.
And
although I did really like the kid.
Which I thought was important.
that was cute.
You can see that, of course, you know, Frank likes the kid. He, you know, loves being able to interact with the kid. He insists on taking them out for breakfast, which I think is a good move.
So Mark, let that on Frank's part.
Let that be a lesson to all of you one night standers out there. You know, the least you can do is buy some pancakes for the kid.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
he'll love you forever.
Yeah, well, which maybe you don't want. But and you know, I liked the little back and forth about hockey. I thought it was some good character stuff, even though the actual sequence of Frank and Beth together, you know, I felt like few minutes less would have gone a long way.
That's all it was. Like,
they could have saved some of those minutes of running time for the fight that comes up a little bit later.
The bathroom scene fight?
There could have been another sink scene, something.
Yeah.
Let us know in the chat if you're watching live or even if you're watching the archive version what you thought about that first part of the first episode of season two. Are we hearing in the chat from some of our friends?
Just Ivan Soto says, gross, it's supposed to be Frank and Karen.
I mean, it should be Frank and Karen. I've said on the other show that Z and I do, Marvel TV Weekly, Karen is definitely available. She's clearly not with Matt. Foggy Bear's all locked up with Marcy. So, I think that maybe Karen's had some troubled men in her life, though. So maybe this wouldn't be healthy for her.
It definitely wouldn't be the most healthy of relationships, but I think that Karen would be really good for Frank.
I think it would definitely be good for Frank, absolutely. Barring that, this is, if you can't be with the one you love, love the one you're with, says Frank Castle. And so he does go back to the bar, and I kind of like the moment where, you know, he explains when bantering with her the second night, that she's like, how far did you get? He's like, I got 2 hours down the road. I'm like, oh, I just thought he was down the street turning around. I'm like, man, he got 2 hours away. And he's like, man, I'm going to go back and see her. And I don't know. You know, you don't usually get a lot of cutesy out of Frank. He's like, man, that's a good band.
And actually, Black Magic does say here, it was fine. It was nice to see Frank in a relatively good place. I did enjoy him smiling and being at ease in the bar. Yeah. It's not a side of him you get to see that often.
But always, when you're Frank Castle, you got to live life one beer at a time. Never run a tab.
No,
we're just not one beer at a tab. One beer at a time.
That's because he has no credit cards. That's basically what he's saying. He's like, I only have wads of cash.
Yeah, exactly. He's like, I've got thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars in cash, but I cannot put a card down. Pete Castiglione has an immaculate credit rating. He doesn't want to do anything to it. Well, let's talk about sort of the focus of this first episode, which is the young girl whom we don't know her name at this point. We don't know any of her names at this point, who I do think that they have a really funny interaction at first. She's like, what are you looking at? You know, and she calls him Rough Road, which I think is actually pretty funny, because then you look at Frank and you go like, that's a pretty rough road.
I mean, she was being 100% accurate.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And so obviously he can't help but notice this obnoxious girl because she's super jumpy, even the first night, you know.
Dancing around.
And then the second night he's like, all right, what's going on here? And he can't help himself. And he steps in, you know, he hears the altercation in the ladies' room. And I love the guy that they have, you know, manning the ladies' room to keep people out. Because you just look at that guy and you go like, oh, yeah. I mean, it's like of all the people in this crew that could be, you know, blocking Frank from the door, this is like he's not even going to break a sweat. And he didn't. You know?
But it was fun to see him pretend to be drunk. I also really enjoyed that.
Which tells me, like, okay, he probably hasn't been drunk in a long time. He's probably like, well, I'm so drunk and I don't have any weapons at all. I am not that drunk. All right, well, let's talk about it. I'm sure you have Zia, for anyone that has never noticed, she takes copious notes for every show that she watches. So she has a little notebook right here. So I want you to get to the section in your notebook about the fight scene in the bathroom. And I want you to share some of your thoughts as you took them down and just some of your what stood out for you about that sequence.
OK, first of all, him hitting or no, I'm sorry. It wasn't him. It was the young girl. Yeah. I have just her as young girl in here.
Yeah.
And I actually have young girl is very annoying.
By the way, not wrong.
No,
not wrong.
In those first couple of episodes, I was like, ooh, girl.
Stop running away. Anyway,
what are you doing?
Yeah.
When she hits, well, first of all, he smashes the one guy's head into the sink and breaks the sink.
That's my favorite part.
That guy was definitely dead, right?
Yeah.
I thought so.
Yeah, death by sink, though.
Yes, yes. So that was amazing. And then another note that I have here, just this is on besides just the fight scene that is awesome. And I love the young girl actually smashing the other girl.
Oh, good. She got involved.
Yeah, me too. At least she helped out.
Yeah.
Because gosh.
Because even if she'd like tried to help out and it didn't like knock anybody over, you're like, all right, don't just sit there and hide.
Yeah.
You know? Like, clearly he could use another pair of hands, you know?
Just a little bit. He's he's trained and ridiculous, but he's also up against other trained people that are clearly well-trained. But my favorite...
Well, yeah, but they're, like, Michigan well-trained.
Michigan
well-trained.
So he could still take, like, five or six of them, obviously.
And by the way, I'm just teasing anyone from Michigan. It's just jokes, all right? You know, we're just playing around. I don't really mean anything bad about your state.
Pen pal in Michigan. He was cool.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
Yeah. But I also loved when he stabs the one girl in the chest. He just turns around and stabs her with it. And you can just see the look on her face like, oh, we messed up. And yes, you did.
There's something personally gratifying about seeing people hurt with their own weapons. Because it's like, well, if you didn't pull that on the Punisher, you might still be alive. You know, he's only stabbing you with that knife because you pointed it at him. You know, he didn't go like, oh, let me use my stabbing knife.
Nope.
You know?
He would have just knocked your head into a sink or something.
Yeah, and maybe not killed you. But, you know, probably.
Probably
would have killed you. Yeah, look, this is like a A++ top level fight scene. It's right up there with Daredevil season 3. Yeah, all the Daredevil hallway scenes.
Yeah.
This was up there with kind of anything in season 1 of this show. I just sort of love the unique nature of it happening in the bar / the ladies' room and kind of the inventive nature of the fact that you're able to have things like death by sink. What were some of your more general thoughts on that, Zia?
Well, a big thing in that scene as well is I have noted here. I felt Ringo.
Oh, yeah. We should talk about Ringo the Bouncer.
I felt so bad for him.
He seemed like a good guy.
He just seemed like a nice guy. And just when he was also just sitting there eating his burger, too.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, no, don't.
How good did that burger look?
It looked really good. I wanted it. The yeah. fries, too.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, next time. And Ringo, yeah, seemed like a good guy. And look, he's definitely more than carrying his own at first.
Oh, he was doing great, yeah. but he was just outmatched. And there were too many of them that had weapons.
That's what I was going to say. Is he was no match for weapons, but he was definitely well matched for...
That neck break?
Yeah. He's just like, I finally get to do what I've been wanting to do the whole time I've been here.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I know. And you could feel for Beth because, like, Ringo's probably one of the only constants there, in this bar.
I'm sure they probably got close. And he's constantly having to kick out jerks who are hitting on her in super weird ways, like creepy guy that you mentioned.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm sure that they've formed a little bit of a bond. So that was sad. And then her getting shot also.
Yeah, and just the world's most difficult shotgun to load that she had there. Just she could not get it loaded. Just imagine if she could have. And, I think that's a big reason why they spent so much time with the character. Because they wanted it to be significant for Frank when she gets shot. That it's not just, I think anyone who got shot but wasn't dead, he would probably be focused on, all right, let's see if I can get them some medical attention. But because it was this lady who he spent the previous night with and took her kid for pancakes, I think that it gave it more weight, which I we both know exactly what they were doing, why they spent so much time with it.
It does make sense. It does. I mean, that's why I'm not knocking it too much.
Yeah, and it shows that even amidst all of that, the uncertainty of trying to figure out who these people are, why they want this girl, why she's trying to get away from them, he's like, all right, well, I'm going to see what I can do to help Beth and make sure that she pulls through. So that's kind of the gist of that first episode. That is our main story. And, Zia, one of the things you talked about, we gave a very quick overview of these same first three episodes on Marvel TV Weekly this past Sunday. But I know that, like me, you kind of like when an episode of a show starts right in the thick of everything. And then you're like, I don't know what's going on, but this is great. And then it's like, okay, let's back it up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And then they catch up and we see why he's in the van with the girl, who these people are that are stopping in the middle of the road. I always like sort of the Tarantino-esque cycle back. I always think is pretty interesting.
Which I actually also do have in my notes when they do that. It's right in the beginning where they're up in the van and she goes, now what? Because the car pulled in front of them. There's people and Frank just pulls out his gun, shoots them all. And literally in my head, I was like, that's what.
Like, it was that's Frank. What. Before we move on to episode two, episode one was entitled Roadhouse Blues, an excellent title. We do get to see Agent Madani visiting Billy Russo's room.
Oh.
And we do get the revelation of the Billy Russo mask, which I think is a little bit of a controversial choice on part of showrunner Steve Lightfoot and everyone involved. That, I think that they do a good job of explaining it in a subsequent episode. But when you see it, you go like, wait, no. I mean, Billy Russo, he's not character with a really bad mask. He's like the Punisher's nemesis. And that definitely, it's a little jarring in all the wrong ways when you see the mask, right? What did you think when you first saw that?
Yeah, I wasn't a huge fan. I did at least like the way that they explained it, mm-hmm. but it was interesting with the colors that they went with.
Yeah.
And the design. Yeah, it's just, and it was just, obviously it was drawn on.
Yeah.
I didn't mind it as much though. Like it wasn't, especially because I knew that they've been pulling the mask out a little bit, but I knew eventually the mask was going to come off.
Yes.
And we were going to see his face. And I know that this is something that Ivan has brought up before in the chat, and some other people have brought up that, and as soon as I saw his face, I was like, the scarring is not as bad as it probably should be.
Yeah, I mean, I understand that it's you have for yourselves a handsome actor that you want to be able to capitalize on that, but if you're watching this show, you have to be ready for spoilers on this. And I mean, he's Jigsaw, and his face is not jigsawed at all.
Mm-mm.
It's like, even if they just decided, like, well, you know what, we're just going to do, like, maybe one side of it, one part of it. But it's like, he's just got some scratches.
Right.
It was like he got thrown through a plate glass window, and that was it.
And if I had seen a man with scars like that on his face, like, everybody's like, oh, you freak. Like, I wouldn't even think that.
Well, yeah. And I certainly wouldn't say it to a guy with those scars on the bus.
No, not that. No, not that doing guy that. Was crazy.
Yeah. So I think that, and basically, all we really see Billy do is open his eyes in this first episode. So we'll talk a little bit more about Billy, and we'll talk about episode two right after this very important message from our own Zia Landerson.
I have a really important message to you guys. So before we move on to our next topic, we just wanted to say thank you for making us the ESPN of TV Talk. And for continuing to grow, we could use your help. If you're on YouTube right now, hit that thumbs up button and subscribe. If you're on iTunes, please give us a 5-star rating. Stars 1 through 4 just do not work for some reason. So I'm just at 5. And no matter where you are, leave us a comment so you can get involved in the conversation, because we love talking to you guys. Being a part of AfterBuzz TV has meant so much to all of us, and we truly appreciate you supporting us and doing what we love. Don't forget to tell your friends and keep enjoying our shows. Thank you so much.
And thank you. So we move on to episode 2 now, which Frank and the girl are on the run, and they're treating his wounds. And you can feel for her a little bit here. Like, she's being obnoxious, and she has the bad instincts of trying to run away, which I think when we get to know her a little bit more, you can understand that she's just like, that's what I do, is I run away from the situation, and I won't stop running until I feel safe. And you don't necessarily, not even necessarily, you don't feel safe with Frank Castle, especially when you first meet him. And instead of feeling like she's been rescued, she's having to, it's a pretty funny scene, but she has to dig a bullet out of his ass.
And then sew it up.
Yeah, I know. It's like, it's not enough. Right. Then you have to sew it up. And I think that, you know, the actress who played her did a great job of like, wait, what are you doing? Because he's like, he's taking his pants off.
Which I'm sure she's seen her fair share of.
Yeah.
Growing up, you know, however, who knows how, whatever happens.
Yeah, I mean, especially at this point, we don't really know that much about what she's...
Except that she's on a rough path, so I'm sure her past was not great.
Yeah, I'm sure that this, you know, in fact, we know for certain when we see little bits of her flashback, you know, crappy motels like this are probably nothing for her to have to go through. And this is probably not as traumatic as other things that she's had to done there, had to do in some of these places. I do think we have some good interaction between Frank and who at this point she's calling herself Rachel. We find out pretty soon that that's just one of several names, but we'll call her Rachel while we talk about this episode. I think that this is sort of one of those important episodes that gets us ready for the next episode. You know what I mean? This is really setting us up. I think that there's another cool fight scene here, and it shows how Frank is thinking a couple steps ahead. I love that he gets the hotel room on the other side of the wall, mm-hmm. so that he can tunnel into the other room, mm-hmm. and you know, kind of use that as a staging station for the inevitable arrival of more of the thugs from episode 1. Give me just some overall thoughts about Frank and, I'm using air quotes for those not watching on YouTube, Rachel, and just sort of how he prepares her to survive this inevitable shootout.
Well, what's the most annoying thing about that is the fact that he clearly knows what he's doing. He goes over. I love the scene where he's arguing with the woman about the room he wants to. That was great.
Yeah.
And he gets the room that he wants, and, you know, she's kind of watching all of this and, like, clearly is still trying to get away or still thinking about escaping. He had to zip tie her to the bed, which is just crazy. I mean, granted, he doesn't have the best bedside manner, but at this point, you're watching everything that he's done and everything that he's preparing to do, and you're still trying to leave. And the reason that's infuriating is because you know what you're facing, and, everyone else is dead. Yeah. And he's working this hard to save you, and you're not going to stick around. It's just crazy.
I did like the moment where she's like, "Oh, you're not going to be able to sleep because I'm going to keep yelling." And he's like, "Oh, you think so? Why do you think I got duct tape in here?"
It was specifically for your mouth.
Yeah.
No, that was really funny. And And it's just, but I love watching Frank work. Like, that's one of my favorite things is when he sees what's coming, he knows, and he's planning for it. And then you just get to watch it all unfold. And that was so fun. Because in my mind, when he was knocking down the wall, I, for some reason, didn't even think. I was just like, I know this is for something, but I don't know.
Yeah, I thought that he was just going to be in the back of the closet.
Yeah.
I'm not smart enough to put together the fact that it's like, we had got an extra room. I wasn't quite sure. I thought that maybe he was going to hide out in a different room.
That's what I thought.
Wasn't really thinking about it.
Yeah, but no, instead he comes through from the other room, through the wall, and unleashes some hell.
Which the next time I'm in a shootout in a motel, I'm going to do the same thing.
Oh, I'm 100% using
that. Now, here's the problem, though, is that everybody's going to know that trick now. So they're going to go find the room on the other side and, you know, be ready back there. But
and that's when you knock the wall into the room on the other side and you just...
Mm-hmm. I'm just going to buy all the rooms.
You
know? Just going to be everywhere.
And create a maze through all of the different rooms.
Yeah, I think that, again, interesting, compelling sequence to watch. But again, Rachel just can't help herself. She feels like she just has to run away again. And I don't think you steal the Punisher's van. I know she doesn't know who he is at this point, but
still,
this is just bad instincts, stealing the Punisher's van, you know? Does this seem like a guy whose car you should steal?
Nope.
Yeah.
And then she flips him off and she's like, see you later, psycho. And you're like, really? This guy saved your life, like a bunch.
Yeah, like quite a bit, actually.
But okay.
And then I think Frank assesses the... You know, when he is face to face with the police, he realizes, like, you know, I'm sure I could shoot my way out of the situation, but these are police doing their jobs, which I think, you know, I think different characters would handle that situation a little differently. You know, maybe they would even just try and wound the police, but he's like, all right, I can't start shooting. There's, you know, too many people are going to get hurt. Let's just get turned in. But he also figures, all I got to do is call my pal Agent Madani and everything's going to be fine.
Uh-huh. He
and,
thinks.
She gets that call right in the middle of a nightmare about Billy Russo. And we'll talk about Madani and Russo in a second. But I think that it's interesting that she's just like, no, you know, that you had the one get out of jail free card. This isn't like a get out of jail hotline. You know, are you surprised about her initial reaction to Frank calling her, especially in the middle of the night out of nowhere?
No, not at all. I feel like that's kind of her MO. She gave him that one get out of jail free card, and she doesn't seem to really get too close to people or too attached, especially after what happened with her and Russo. So I think at this point she's like, I don't want to be dragged back into all of this. And she's already obsessing over Russo so much.
Yeah.
That it, she's not like, she, why would she want to bring that back in?
Which is interesting. And let's talk about that. The fact that she confesses that she was visiting him twice a day. And I mean, which one of these two characters is the psycho, by the way?
Right. And she's, you know, convinced that he's faking.
Yeah. Now, at that point, when we first see him and she's convinced that he's faking it, what are your thoughts? Because my thinking is, like, I don't think he's faking it. Do you think that there's a chance he's faking it? Or?
Well, I thought there was. I think there's always a chance.
Sure.
But for the most part, I was thinking no. Just because of they do have some of his... And see, this is where I'm like, oh no, is it episode two, episode three? But at least it's in one of them where he's working with his therapist.
Yeah, I think that's episode three.
That's episode three.
And actually
okay,
a little bit episode four, I believe.
So I don't want to get too far into it. But just from the little bit that you see, I was pretty convinced that he didn't know what was going on.
Yeah, I think once we start to see, once we start to see his dreams, I'm like, okay, I think he remembers flashes, he remembers little bits. Mm-hmm. And I do think it's interesting that he remembers Frank, who's like a brother. He remembers being in the Marines. He doesn't remember the Black Ops stuff. He definitely doesn't remember, you know, any awareness of Frank's family being killed and, you know, anything from season one.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't remember any of that. He doesn't remember Agent Madani. And then that's the part that drives her crazy, because what she wants is him to not only know what he did and be like, but you didn't, you know, you couldn't kill me. You know, you were unsuccessful. So I can sort of see it's a very complicated. I mean, they're both dealing with trauma in very different ways.
Right.
Him in the way that he can't process hardly any of it. Well, he just can't sleep.
And it's not altogether surprising considering the beating that he took from Frank. Like, I mean, he should have been dead. The fact that he lived through that is insane. So it's not crazy that his brain completely shut down after that. I think they said he was in a coma for 6 weeks.
Yeah.
And his brain completely shuts down after that. So then it's trying to reboot. And how is it supposed to remember anything after that?
Yeah. And we see that not only is Madani obsessed, this is out of her jurisdiction. And I love that her mentor's name is Raffi. And good old Raffi's like, you got to let this go. And, you know, if you've ever watched anything, you always know that the person that's being told, like, you got to stay out of this, you know, like, how many times was Misty Knight told that she has to, you know, stay away from this game, walk it off. She's like, yeah, no problem. Anyway, here I am again. So obviously she wasn't going to listen. And you just know that spells trouble later in the season. So I think, as we go through, we're going to talk a lot more about Billy trying to process what happened to him, especially on tomorrow's show when we talk about episode 4. That'll kind of be the first time that we're really dealing with him. I mean, we see him throughout the series. Before we run out of time, believe it or not, let's talk about episode 3. Which I thought was one of those great. I mean, look, it's an important part of an ongoing narrative, but as like a standalone 1 hour of television, I thought that this was great. This is a self-contained, you know, what you can kind of look at as like a bottle episode, because it's set in this police station pretty much the whole time. And what happens in the police station doesn't go the way you expect. You know, you figure you've got Frank, pretend Rachel, and you know, this psycho that's trying to kill Rachel, that Frank ran into in the previous 2 episodes,
who I just refer to as creepy religious man.
Well, I'm talking about I'm talking about the girl in jail. Oh, we'll talk about him in a second, but the girl that's in jail. So
you have the
three of them inside your jail. You have to figure, well, obviously everybody's going to end up dead, you know, because they're like, nope, we are not letting anybody go. You know, it's like, we're going to do this by the books. And I thought that they did a really nice job of illustrating how isolated this precinct is, you know, that it's the state troopers are going to be like, I think they said it's like an hour away, and they lose all connection, you know, any way to communicate with anyone. So they really are isolated. And I thought they did a decent job showing, like, yeah, you would kind of believe these characters as being at a precinct like this, you know, especially the not particularly physically fit, like, desk cop. You know, you don't get a lot of that in your movies and TV.
And I did really like that one moment of humor with him where, after all is said and done and there's all that carnage, he's like, is it messed up that I'm hungry?
I was just like, yeah, I would be too, brother. I would want to eat Ringo's hamburger right now. And I just thought it was just so well done. You care about the characters. I kind of like their interaction. And you felt the sheriff really struggling with, he has this guy who, you know, a vigilante. If you're a policeman, you don't want vigilantes out there taking matters into their own hand. But at the same time, you want to protect, you know, your community. You want to protect your brothers and sisters in uniform. And you know that this guy can handle it. You know, you figure it out pretty quickly, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And they don't even know he's the Punisher. Like, no. they don't know anything about Frank Castle. They're just like, this guy's going to be a good shot. He's going to be able to head out there and take care of it. Tell me what you thought about these police officers and their interactions with Frank, Rachel, and can we just call her Crazy Bitch? I don't know what to call that lady.
You can.
Yeah, I don't know what to call that character. No, I don't even know that we get a name for her.
Nuts. We don't.
They do give her, they do have a name because they run her.
You're right. Yeah. It's so like Miriam or something like that. Oh, goodness. You're right. Anyway, yes, she's insane. And I kind of enjoyed watching her die, and I knew it was going to happen.
There's only one way that was going to end.
Of course. I really, really enjoyed the way that they portrayed. I think the sheriff's name was Roy. Is that what it was?
I think you're right. Yeah.
So I really, really enjoyed him just as a character, because he's one of those characters where in a sea of kind of very annoying characters, the female cop was driving me crazy. She's like, he's a murderer.
Yeah.
It's like, you don't know the full story at all. You're just making assumptions.
Yeah.
Which was crazy. But I liked how astute he was and how he picked up on everything. He didn't believe Rachel's ridiculous story that she's like, I'm just 16, call child. Like, I mean, I know her character is 16, but he's still like, she's like, I'm the innocent bystander and all this. He took one look at her and was like, you're lying to me. I know that. And he was just, he's one of those characters that I just really enjoyed. And I like that he was trying to do what was right no matter what. Like, he wasn't just going to, he knew giving up Frank / Pete and Rachel to, you know, I guess it's, I call him creepy.
Yeah, we'll talk about him in a second. Creepy man. The mysterious religious man. Yes.
And that would probably result in their death. So he's not willing to do that, even at the detriment to his own men. And I think that seeing Ogden get shot, really sort of forced his hand, but sort of that with the onslaught of, you know, the insane gunshots in there, which was crazy cool. Letting Frank sort of let loose. And then again, that's my favorite part. It's like, oh my God, just let Frank go.
With the broken arm, by the way. And he's like, you got any black tape? He's like, yeah, I'm going to be fine. Don't worry about this. Yeah, I just got to cover up the cast because I don't want anybody to see it. And yeah, look, Ogden is obviously, I think in a lot of versions of this same story, the character who gets into the police vehicle and takes a sniper bullet, well, he's not going to be long for the episode. But it was nice to see. And I thought that it humanized the Rachel character that, you know, she had the interaction. And then she's like, oh, my God, that guy almost died. And she gives him back his $5. That's a nice touch.
I was like, oh, okay.
She's like, I still don't like you, but...
but here's your money back, and I'm glad you're alive.
Yeah. All right, so let's talk about this mysterious man whom we saw in the first couple episodes, but I kind of wanted to wait until now to talk about him, because this episode does actually start with the flashback, and we see him at church. We see, you know, there's a situation at home where his wife is clearly not well. Mm-hmm. And we also see his faded, poorly laser removal white supremacist tattoos, Nazi tattoos.
That
I think
was an iron cross.
Yeah,
for sure.
And there were two, and I forget what the other one was, but
it looked like the helmet.
Like the World War II helmet.
Yeah. It looked like that, but it was hard to see because it was kind of faded. Because
it was faded, but the cross was definitely very apparent.
Yeah.
So just to kind of get to know him, I found his interaction with the sheriff, who I do agree with you. I think his name is Roy. I liked that he actually talked to him. He's like, all right, well, you know, you're a God-fearing man. Mm-hmm. I want to give you this opportunity. And not in the way where, you know, sometimes characters will pretend to give you a chance to make things right. You feel like if he had just been like, take these people, he would have been like, all right, fine. Yeah, there's no harm is going to fall you people.
Yeah.
Because I don't know, because you're a man of God, basically.
I legitimately think that he doesn't want to hurt people
that don't deserve it.
Yeah. Sure. I think that he's got this weird, he's still killing people.
He's definitely got a code.
Yeah,
you know,
but he's still operating on
He's
some
following
sort of...
his religious beliefs, which are, you know, not the traditional religious beliefs.
Yeah,
but,
you know, he's... And whatever, or he's got going on with, you know, that man that he was talking to and that sort of flashback.
Yeah.
So there's definitely a bigger story going on there. And watching that makes me want to know what that story
is. Yes, I was fascinated by him. I was glad to see him get away. I didn't want him to get shot at episode 3 in the season, which I didn't actually think was going to happen. But I was glad to see it didn't happen.
Yeah.
And at this point, it's more just looking forward to when he turns up again. And then as we wrap up this episode, of course, Billy Russo manages to break out of his hospital. The doctor, who clearly way too trusting and accommodating, lets him get out. I mean, obviously she's being threatened, but there are different ways she could have handled it.
Oh,
but she was so 100%. Worried about him being safe that, you know, she helped Billy Russo get out, not 100% willingly. I'm not saying that. But, and of course, then Madani's like, well, I need the Punisher. So all of a sudden, that's the reason why we get the Homeland Security helicopter. And I think that's the moment where creepy religious Nazi guy is just like, all right, this is more than I'm biting off way more than I could chew. My whole army has been taken out. Mm-hmm. There's a Homeland Security helicopter here. I don't know who this guy is. I'm going to kind of circle the wagons a little bit and come back. What did you think about sort of that moment when, you know, Madani shows up in the helicopter to be like, all right, everybody, you don't got to stay home, but you can't stay here.
I mean, I thought it was great. Yeah. It was perfect timing. And it was amazing the way everybody looked at it and was like, okay, so there's way more to this guy than we even know, because he literally has Homeland Security sort of at his disposal showing up with helicopters. So I just loved it. I thought it was great. It was an almost comical moment, even though it wasn't meant to be.
Still was. And especially because it comes right as creepy Nazi religious guy actually has Frank in his sights. Mm-hmm. Now, I think that, you know, Frank has certainly realized he's been in someone's sights before and it doesn't end well for that person. But I think it definitely sort of, it was a nice way to be like, all right, we're going to put a pin in this, no pun intended, and we will see how this goes. So at the end of the episode, they all head to New York, which is where we will pick things up tomorrow. I know that when we do these binge-style shows that there's a lot of ground to cover, so let us know if you feel like we're going too fast, but we wanted to make sure we could pack as much in as possible. We will do episodes 4, 5, and 6 tomorrow at 3 Pacific, 6 Eastern. Or, of course, you can always just subscribe, as Zia mentioned earlier, and you can also watch the archive version. So tune in for the Punisher After Show tomorrow, and then we'll be back again next Wednesday and Thursday, and we'll finish off the series next week. Until then, you can find me at ChristianDMZ on Twitter and Instagram. And Zia, where do people find you?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Zia underscore land. It's XIA underscore land.
And I'll be sitting in on the Popcorn Talk Network's Marvel Movie News tomorrow at 1 Pacific. So look for me over there. But until then, we will see you tomorrow for more Punisher.
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.